In slide 15, the device addressing logic is presented. We remember that such a kind of byte is written onto the bus when the attention signal is enabled by the system controller or by the present active controller. The five low bits constitute the primary address to which the communication is addressed. So we can say that we can manage up to 32 different devices with such a system, and the most significant bit is always zero to play as a parity checksum. The bit 6 is high when the address is related to a talker device, while the bit 5 is high when the following address is related to a listener device. The code 3F and the code BF, respectively, correspond to the disable function. Towards all the listeners present in a particular moment into the network, or oriented, directed to all the talkers that at the same time can be present in a particular phase of the communication. We said that this way we can manage up to 32 different devices. This is not completely true because we can have a second, let's say, address layer related to subgroups or subunits of devices connected to one of the previously addressed devices. So we can establish in such a way a hierarchy of devices connected into the network, addressing a group of up to 32 main ones to which a subgroup can be connected also. And in this case, we will have that such a kind of byte of addressing will feature the bit 5 and bit 6 at the same time high, so set to 1-1, and this byte will be followed by a further byte with a secondary address and following the same logic in terms of bits indicating listening or talking. On the basis of this addressing, suitable commands can be sent to the devices and can be grouped in four classes. The first is called universal or multi-line and corresponds to commands sent to all the peripherals with an end shake. They are called DCL, LLO, SPE, SPD, PPU, UNT, UNL. UNT and UNL have been already addressed a few moments before as disabling talkers and disabling listeners. The second class is the so-called uniline commands that are devoted to all peripherals without the need of handshaking. In particular, they are the interface clear, the remote enable, and the attention. Finally, we have two groups of commands. The first features the presence of a specific addressing to a particular device, GET, SDC, GTL, PPL, and TCT. And finally, we have let's say, secondary group of commands. That are related to the particular phase of communication called parallel polling. Let's go a bit further into the details about the significance of such a kind of comments. In slide 16, the significance of each multi-line command together with its mnemonic is explained. For example, the device clear command means that all the instruments connected into a certain moment into the network are brought into a predefined state that is defined by the manufacturer and depends on the particular instrument specified into the datasheet. Of course, the device must be in remote mode or previously addressed to receive such a kind of device. Local lockout disables the control return to local for the specific device that has been considered. In practice, this command disables the management of the instrument by means of the local panel. This device can be addressed in local or in remote mode. To enable again the local return to local command, the physical remote enable must be brought to the logic value 0. In such a way, the device is set for coming back to a local control. In other words, by the execution of the local lockout command, basically the operator is prevented from working locally with the particular instrument that is considered. Then we have the two commands related to the serial poll, SPE and SPD, serial poll enable and serial poll disable. A serial polling of all the devices is allowed. These devices are addressed as talkers because the idea is that we poll everyone in a serial way, on a one-by-one basis, I mean, and they answers providing a status byte that represents a particular situation relative to a potential possible service request or a situation into which errors happen or data are available or whatever we can imagine. Clearly, this kind of command is typically used in the debugging phase. Of course, the serial poll disable ends the serial poll mode while resets the devices in talker mode, so they provide the device-dependent information or other status-generic information. Parallel poll unconfigure terminates the peripheral parallel poll for diagnostic. The parallel poll is similar to the serial one in terms of general philosophy, but instead of returning a byte with a codification for every bit, each device simply returns a bit. And that bit, depending if high or low, corresponds to a request for an attention by the system controller or by the active controller. In such a way, in case that bit is high, a further exchange of information will take place with that particular device and the controller. And talk is a command that disables the current talker device, and a similar result can be obtained by selecting another device as talker. Unlisten instead disable all the listener devices. It is not possible to disable a single listener. And before enabling all those devices that we want to set as listener, is typical to execute such a command. So the idea is reset all the listener and set again all only those that we want to define as listener of the current phase of the communication. The next group of commands that are shown in slide 17 are called addressed commands, and basically they are characterized by a function or an action that is related to devices that have been already addressed by a previous command or are addressed by one of them. For example, the first group execute trigger corresponds to sending to all the listener devices previously addressed a command that starts the action previously defined for each of them. And in such a way, we have a very powerful way to simultaneously synchronize many devices set as listeners. Or, for example, select the device clear. All the devices that have been addressed as a listener are brought back to a device-dependent predefined state, that is a state that depends on the particular device that we are considering, typically corresponding to what it is written in the datasheet. Basically, this command is equivalent to the DCL command after addressing the specific destination of the clearing go-to-local. Also, in this case, devices are addressed as listeners and are brought back to their local control mode. In other words, this is a command to make them to exit from the remote control mode. The specific device, in other words, will come back to the remote control if it will be addressed as listener with the REN line set to 1. PPC means a parallel pole configure and says to all the devices addressed as listeners to be configured with the command that will follow this specific PPC command. In other words, the present color controller will send the PPC command to the listener devices and will configure them with a further byte that will be sent after the PPC one. And finally, the take control talker command to which the controller in charge enables the current talker device as the new bus active controller. This is the mechanism on the basis of which the control of the communication can be passed, can be shared among the active controllers, exploiting a token mechanism that is assigned on a step-by-step basis by the system controller. And finally, we have the two secondary commands called the parallel pole enable and parallel pole disable. The first one configures all the devices that receive the PPC so as they can answer to the parallel pole on a particular data line with a certain predefined value, that is 1 or 0, of course. And clearly, parallel pole disable these devices from doing such a kind of thing. We have repeatedly mentioned in the previous descriptions the two serial polling and parallel polling. Now let's go a little bit further into the details about such a kind of procedures. Concerning the serial polling, we said that a particular signal, SRQ, exploiting a service request, is raised up so as to notify the controller that a particular device needs to send information, to send a request, for example. And clearly, this can be managed by one device or by more devices that have the same need, the same problem with respect to the system controller. In particular, after receiving the SRQ signal, the controller will activate the attention signal, so the bus will be set in command mode, the command serial pool enable will be activated, and the devices will be sequentially checked so as to obtain from each one of them a status byte on the basis of which the controller will perform the specific requested action. And then the command serial pool disable will be sent eventually together with the command unt, that is enable the talkers. In case instead of the parallel polling, the general philosophy is the same, but in this case the controller receives not a byte but only one bit on the basis of a previous set configuration. Specifically, the controller activates the attention signal, then sends the parallel polling configuration command to each device that allows to assign to each of them the particular I/O line that will correspond to the answer to the PPE command. That is, the first device will set 1 or 0 the line number 5, the second device will set the line number 1, the third device will set the line number 7, and so on. Then, after this, the controller sends a IOE, a data request, and reads the lines, so identifying those devices that request a service, and will after ask each one of them for a status byte or for more status byte to understand the requirement that must be fulfilled. Sometimes this procedure conceives the presence of shared lines managed in an AND or logic to identify a particular situation that must be notified to the controller, or the status of more than one device that shares that particular line. The answer of a device from after a parallel poll must arrive within 200 nanoseconds. The controller instead must read this answer within 2 microseconds after the 200 nanoseconds. This means that the controller has more time to understand and detect the requests that come from the other devices into the network. Of course, both the approaches feature some benefits and correspondingly also drawbacks. Considering serial pool, clearly the controller can achieve more information on the interrupt generation cause and about the status of the particular device that asked for the service, but the time necessary for a poll cycle increases with the number of the connected device. On the contrary, a parallel poll clearly can execute the polling of 8 devices at the same time, so it is, let's say, faster than the previous one. The status byte must be read to identify the interrupt cause. So this means that if an interrupt, that is, if a request is an event that is not happening very often, clearly the parallel poll is more convenient because less time and less resources are requested to understand the particular situation that must be served. Instead, if the requests will be raised up very often, There is no particular difference between serial and parallel pole because in both the cases we have to perform an interrogation of each device that asked for a service. But in the case of parallel pole, we have two steps. The first concerning the acquisition of the byte, just to say this asked, this not, this asked, this not. And the second step is the further serial poll phase into which we ask for every device that raised up the request what was the particular problem that must be solved. Moreover, with such a kind of approach, I mean parallel poll, only 8 devices at a time in parallel can be polled. Slide 20 shows the general philosophy that undergoes the name of open collector or collected wired or connection that we mentioned when we talked about the signals like not data accepted, not ready for data, that are shared by many receivers at the same time. Looking at the picture, we see that the shared line is the red one that correspond, in this particular case, to the drains of every MOS circuit that is considered. The gates of those MOS circuits are managed by each node that shares the red line. So in one corresponds to the node 1, in 2 to the node 2, and so on. And we see that when the gate of a particular MOS circuit is high, that MOS is active and the corresponding drain point will be approximately low. Instead, when the gate is low, no current is crossing the MOS since it is not active, and the corresponding drain point will be high. But we understand that it is enough that one of those MOS circuits, one, in other words, of the nodes, is keeping the gate at a high value to obtain that the current of that node and eventually of all the other nodes can go to the ground through that MOS circuit, so keeping the line low. This means that the line is shared and the value of the line, in this case active low, will be defined by the slowest of the devices that can change the input gate of its own corresponding MOS circuit, MOS interface to the output red line. In other words, for example, if in 1 is high, in n is 1, and in 2 is 0, the output line, the output red line, will be 0. If in 1 and in 2 are both 0, so the two MOS 1 and 2 are not active, but the last one is active because in n is 0, the content of the line will be still low. Only when all the MOS circuits will be not active, that is only when all the input gates are high, the red line will be high. This is the concept that allows to us to say that we adapt the velocity of the commutation of the line to the slowest one of the devices connected to it. In these few words, we have described more or less the general philosophy of the IEEE 4881 standard that defines the electric, mechanical and protocol characteristics of the communication made through such a kind of standard. The 4.8.8.2 version enriched further the standard by specifying data format, error management, possible controller functions, type of status information and typical commands to be assigned to the instrument. The complete explanation of all these characteristics is out of the scope of this course, because we will see such a kind of a philosophy with a very high level of detail in the case of the CAN bus. But it helps to understand that what it is the present state of a communication protocol in digital communication is not a specific set of rules that have been defined at the beginning, but instead the end of, let's say, a long road made up by several milestones, several steps, into which everyone added a further useful, of course, characteristic that improved the overall operativity of the communication considered. In the slide 21, another typical standard for parallel communication is shown. It is called Centronics interface. This is a de facto standard due to the great popularity of personal computers that usually are equipped with a USB and a parallel interface for the printers. This kind of interface is called Centronics, that is very suitable for fast communications at short distance. Signals are in TTL logic and bring 8 data lines together with a few control signals distributed on connectors called Canon with 25 pins. In the most recent production, the connection between the PC and the printer through the Centronic interface is organized in half duplex way. A complete different world is represented by the so-called serial communications, into which a single signal brings a sequence of bits one at a time. The distances considered typical in such a kind of communications are still short, but in any case are greater than in the case of parallel communications. We are talking that typical serial communication distances are in the order of hundreds of meters, where instead parallel communications typically are carried out in few meters. The transmission velocity is expressed in symbols or bits per second, also called baud rate, and typically go from 75 up to 1 million bit per second, depending on the particular application range we are considering. The initial very low velocities ranging from 75 to 600 both are basically no more used, and the bottom of the range of the velocities that we can consider is represented by the range 1200 9600 bit per second, that corresponds to low standard velocities used in PLC and in communications between microprocessors and instrumentations. Then we have the average standard velocities ranging from more or less 20 kilobit per second up to 56,400 bits per second. going up to 1 megabit per second, typical in field buses, and 10 megabit, 1 gigabit per second, popular in high velocities networks for local LANs. Serial communications are characterized by the so-called synchronization techniques. We have a synchronization at bit level, character level, message level. They are characterized also by the range of values of which signals consist, the codification, and eventually, in case of noise of or other sources of disturbances, modulations, and even in terms of error techniques for recovery, detection, or eventually cancelling those errors due to the presence of noise onto the line. We have several standards that characterize the industrial world, the RS-232 and its successive versions is one of the most popular that we can find in industrial applications, and of course USB. To synchronize two partners into a serial communication means that we have to establish a time window into which the receiver can sample, and thus it can read, the voltage levels of the received signals. On the other hand, we have also to establish a window into which the sender can write its own signal. And finally, we have to establish a tight relationship between these two time windows. Three techniques typical exist: isochronous, asynchronous, and synchronous. While the first one is very simple, also from the implementation point of view, and used for short distances, the second is typical in those environments into which different manufacturers' equipment are connected, while the last one is very diffused and popular in the field buses and local networks. Isochronous means in Greek language same time, and that's true because between the sender and the receiver a single clock is shared. The convention is that, for example, on the falling edge the sender will put the signal onto the line, and on the rising edge the receiver will sample the line, so establishing what kind of information has been sent to it. Of course, this is an example. Clearly we can set the opposite convention. On the falling edge the sender writes, on the as well as on the rising edge the sender writes and the receiver samples. But such a kind of an approach feature a couple of limitations. First of all, clearly the clock must reach the other partner into the communication, so the duration of the clock is related to the velocity of the signal, but also to the distance between the two partners into the communication. The velocity clearly is fixed, and if we want to have a communication enough fast, clearly we need to have in mind what kind of distances we can accept between the two interlocutors in the communication. Second, who generates the clock? If the clock is generated by the sender, a clock and data will travel together. But if the clock is generated by the destination, by the receiver, this is not true. and the receiver will receive a data after a delay that is equal to the time necessary to propagate the clock toward the sender and then to receive it back. So, in this case, the bandwidth is half than the value it could have due to the fact that the distance between the two partners must be run through two times. Clearly, these limitations suggest to apply the isochronous technique to short connections, also to avoid to collect noise, and in any case limit the maximum velocity that the communication can achieve. On the other hand, this technique is very easy to implement, as I said at the beginning, because, for example, the precision in the pulses is not a critical issue. In fact, the edges will determine the sample time. So, it is not a problem if there is a jitter in the amplitude, in the width of the pulses. Clearly, it is not possible to accept that the difference in time between a pulse and another pulse, I'm talking about the clock, of course, is very high, because this will affect the reliability of the velocity of the transmission. The standard RS-232 is a typical communication protocol that exploits the isochronous technique and that can be found in industrial applications. Another commercial communication protocol is the so-called Philips I2C bus that, however, exploits a slightly different idea. In other words, in such a kind of approach, an open collector signal between sender and receiver is shared. And this signal is managed separately by each one of the two partners in the communication that alternatively puts it high or low. For example, the receiver keeps this signal low until the receiver itself is not ready to receive data. And then it raises up so as to notify the sender that now can send the data. On the contrary, when the sender detects this signal high, it will start to transmit, and then it will put the signal low so as to notify the receiver that the data have been sent, and now no more data will be sent until the new ready to accept phase of the receiver itself. So, in this way, we have the possibility to further simplify the standard, clearly to be independent on the duration of the handshake signal that we have used, because again, the handshake is based on the monitoring of the edges of this signal. The idea is more or less similar to what we have already seen in the parallel communication protocol IEEE 488, but in this case it is applied to only one signal that is shared among the partners of the communication. The isochronous technique features the presence of synchronization characters at the beginning of the communication. In other words, when the communication starts, the sender and the receiver exchange suitable characters that are well known and established at the configuration of the communication, so as to be sure that the mechanism of writing on a certain edge of the clock and reading on the other edge of the clock itself works well, and then to start with the real communication of the information that sender and receiver must exchange during the time into which they interact. We will see a similar approach in the synchronous technique. In this case, it will be based on a more complicated and a little bit expensive device that is called PLL, phase locked loop.